Stands ikke din sjæls flugt. Bedrøv ikke det bedre i dig. Mat ikke din ånd ved halve ønsker og halve tanker. Spørg dig, og hold ved at spørge, indtil du finder svaret. Til man kan have erkendt en ting mange gange, anerkendt den. Man kan have villet en ting mange gange, forsøgt den. Og dog først den dybe indre bevægelse. Først hjertets ubeskrivelige rørelse. Først den forvisser dig om, at hvad du har erkendt, tilhører dig. At ingen magt kan tage det fra dig. Til kun den sandhed, der opbygger, er sandhed for dig.
As a young man, I was seduced by Søren Kierkegaard. I was 20 years old, I was studying philosophy in a small college town in Montana, and I was unsure of who I was and what I was supposed to do with my life. And then I read Either Or, and everything changed.
Do not interrupt the flight of your soul. Do not distress what is best in you. Do not enfeeble your spirit with half wishes and half thoughts. Ask yourself and keep on asking until you find the answer. For one may have known something many times, acknowledged it. One may have willed something many times, attempted it, and yet only the deep inner motion, only the heart's indescribable emotion, only that will convince you that what you have acknowledged belongs to you.
I completely connected with this Dane from another century. Either Or filled me with such confidence, for the first time in my life, I felt that I was on the right track. I moved on to the other books, Fear and Trembling, Works on Love, The Concept of Anxiety, Repetition. I read all the edifying discourses, his strange sermons. I even contemplated a life of study dedicated to Kierkegaard, until I realized I'd have to learn Danish. Stands ikke den sjæls flugt. Bedrøv ikke det bedre af dig. Mat ikke den ånd. Hvad helve ønsker er helve tanker. My favorite Kierkegaard book of all time is Stages on Life's Way. It's kind of the sequel to Either Or, but with a bonus section. Whereas the first book gives us Kierkegaard's theory of the aesthetic and the ethical ways of living life, Stages on Life's Way adds a third, the religious stage. Now, I've read this book many, many, many times, but I've never been able to make sense of what he's talking about when it comes to the religious stage. I always assumed it would come to me later in life with experience, but I'm 37 years old now, and I'm starting to get worried. Like, what if it just never happens? So this summer, I got the opportunity to visit Copenhagen, and I figured I could sneak into the Kierkegaard Research Center posing as a journalist doing a story on Kierkegaard and get some help from the experts.
The religious stage is complicated for many reasons. It has two levels, A and B. A, religiousness. A is the Socratic religiosity.
Kinda.
And the B section is dealing with Christianity.
Joachim Garf is one of the scholars at the research center. He wrote this big book on Kierkegaard that for some reason caused a controversy in Denmark when it came out a few years ago.
You were not allowed to read him aesthetically, and you're not allowed to read him biographically. And I did both. Not in order to provoke, but to me there is this very dramatic tension between the writer and the private person.
The connections between Kierkegaard's private life and his writings are so obvious, it just makes no sense how a Kierkegaard scholar could be controversial for pointing them out. It must be some Danish thing that I just don't get. I mean, the most famous part of Either Or, where Johannes seduces and breaks off an engagement with a girl named Cordelia? Everyone knows that Kierkegaard wrote this just after he broke off his own real-life engagement with Regina Olsen. And in Stages on Life's Way, there's another diary written by a man who also breaks off an engagement. And Garf told me Kierkegaard has this guy quote the actual letter that he wrote to break with Regina Olsen, word for word. In his book, Garf makes many connections between Kierkegaard's life and his various pseudonymous characters. But he also wants us to understand that they're not just his pen names. Kierkegaard wants us to learn about his ideas from his characters.
Kierkegaard has a theory, in a way, about these stages, but he doesn't speak about it as a theory of stages. But he has these pseudonymous figures that represent different perspectives on life.
Marry and you will regret it. Do not marry and you'll also regret it. Whether you marry or you do not marry, you'll regret it either way. Laugh at the stupidities of the world and you'll regret it. Weep over them and you'll also regret it. Whether you laugh at the stupidities of the world or you weep over them, you'll regret it either way.
That's one of the aphorisms written by a character known simply as A. He's one of Kierkegaard's most famous aesthetic characters, and my personal favorite.
He is the modern romantic type. He is a very ironic type. He is a very distant person that suffers from spleen, and he doesn't have a steady job, and he is more or less in a permanent drift.
Hang yourself, and you'll regret it. Do not hang yourself, and you'll also regret it. Whether you hang yourself or do not hang yourself, you will regret it, either way. This, gentlemen, is the quintessence of all the wisdom of life.
Kierkegaard's aesthetic characters are the ones that seduced me. I didn't just understand them, I identified with them. This is how, after graduating college, I ended up on the East Coast, living in this unheated basement apartment, writing and drawing these ridiculous little mini-comics about love and philosophy. I even had my own Kierkegaardian name, Zero Benjamin, because, you know, zero means both everything and nothing, or something like that. But I actually tried to convince the people I sent my comics to that this was my real name, like cartoonist Tim Kreider.
Assumed that Zero was your real name from the get-go. I mean, it is a name, isn't it? Wasn't Zero Mostel actually named Zero Mostel?
My friend Tim's a real hoarder, and he still has all the comics and letters I sent to him from this time, my testament to the aesthetic stage of life.
Dear Tim, how the hell are you? I finally got the whole story on the twin makeout session. Dig, I was kissing and feeling them both, but Megan quit, and I locked myself with Jade in one of the bedrooms. Well, Megan busts in, and I turn to her, direct quote according to Megan, but I do not recall. Hey, what are you doing? I'm about to go down on your sister. Woo-hoo! I am such a fucking moron. So, Tim, why do women exist? There are a lot of exclamation points after that. I am having financial problems still, but I'm working on it. I believe this letter is coming to a close because the handwriting is deteriorating rapidly. I am so drunk I can't get my shoes off. I guess that's it. That's all, folks. Tomorrow I'm going to work at this tea shop for this lady. Too bad I don't even know how to make tea, so I guess I should go to bed. Heart, ZB. You better stop by and visit before I saw my head off. The end.
This went on for a few years, but eventually I gave up on the pseudonyms and the comics, and eventually I moved out of the unheated basement apartment, and eventually I end up living with a girl. And then one night I'm laying on the new couch, this couch that had to be hoisted into the apartment by crane, and she's setting up the drawing rack in front of the bookshelf. And I can see my Kierkegaard books with their colored spines peeking out at me between her bras and panties, and all of a sudden, it's like bang! I realize I am living in the ethical stage.
And when I, as a married man, rest my head on her shoulder, I'm not a critic who admires or sees the lack of some earthly beauty. Nor am I an infatuated youth who celebrates her bosom. But nevertheless, I am as deeply moved as the first time. For I know what I knew and what I'm repeatedly convinced of. That there within my wife's breast beats a heart quietly and humbly, but steadily and smoothly. And I know it beats for me and my welfare, and for what is mutually ours.
Judge William, he's the ethical person. He's a married man, he has two kids, and he's working in the court. He is addressing himself to this esteem in order to be his educator in a way.
I really tried to open my heart to Judge William, but the writings are dull and pedantic. They're actually called Reflections on Marriage. And so, one night after the girl and I have this nasty row over whether or not the closet in the kitchen should be painted or wallpapered, it hits me that if Kierkegaard really believed this marriage crap, then he would have gotten married himself. And I realize I can't find the answers I'm looking for in Judge William because the answers aren't there.
Kierkegaard is well aware that you should try to get hold of your reader and try to lead your reader to certain ideas and certain positions and certain conflicts.
Of course, I didn't tell my girlfriend that I left her because I was on a quest to live out Kierkegaard's religious stage, but it's true. Once again, I was seduced by Soren Kierkegaard.
Kierkegaard is a very seductive author. His style, his rhetoric, his ideas, his way of addressing himself to the reader is seductive. And his idea is that one should be taken through the aesthetic stage and up to the ethical stage, and from that further on to the religious.
Now, as I said, I've read Stages on Life's Way many, many, many times, but I've never been able to make sense of the religious section of the book. The section is mostly made up of diary entries from another young man. This one is found at the bottom of a lake. But unlike the seducer's diary from Either Or, it's really not fun to read. The diary is like a blog written by someone who can't afford a psychiatrist. It's like DIY therapy, totally and completely impenetrable.
It's a very, very sad diary in a way. It's a very, very dramatic, and it's a very alarming diary, because we have this writer who again and again returns to some very painful reflections, and in a way it's far too much. And maybe that's a part of the idea in the diary, that Kierkegaard reflects so enormously that the reader should say, well, enough is enough. I should try to live my own life. I should try to get rid of that way of self-reflection and self-relation, which is a very painful discourse. So that might be a way of reading it, that the book simply wants to push the reader away.
And that's the closest I got to Joachim Garf giving me the secret to the religious stage. But to be fair, it was incredibly foolish of me to think that I could get a quick and easy answer from him. I've read enough Kierkegaard to know better than that. In fact, one of the only things I am sure about in my quest is that it's supposed to get harder.
If there were one person whom I could turn to, I would go to him and say, "Bitte, bitte, put a little meaning for me into my confusion." To me, the most appalling meaning is not as appalling as meaninglessness.
To tell you the truth, though, I don't know if the indirect answer is working for me anymore. I've kind of had it with all the clues and the hints. I need something a little more tactile, something I can put on my refrigerator or make my Facebook status. And this is why finding the religious stage is so important to me. I figure, just as he helped me earlier in life, Kierkegaard will come through for me now. This is why I kept pressing Garf for the answer. I'm sure I seemed ridiculous. But as he walked me out of the Kierkegaard Research Center, he did give me one last thing.
Being desperate or being in despair in Kierkegaard opens you to the religious life.
I spent a week in Copenhagen. I walked many of Kierkegaard's favorite streets, and I visited the museum where they have some of his things on display. The most amazing thing I saw was the engagement ring that Kierkegaard gave to Regina Olsen. When she gave it back to him, he reset the stones in the form of a cross, and he wore this until his death. This image of Kierkegaard putting on his ring every morning before starting his work is what I see now when I think of the religious stage. And for some reason, this image fills me with incredible comfort and hope.